Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Dugout Dudes on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm Brett Tomko with my co-host Josh Luke. We've been talking to Eric Burns on what has been going on since retiring from baseball and getting into the sport of endurance racing. Eric has brought us many stories about his introduction into the sport and what he has recently done by completing a triathlon across America, which included a 7-mile swim across the San Francisco Bay, a 2,300-mile bike ride from Oakland to Chicago, and over a 900-mile run to New York, finishing up at Old Yankee Stadium. And this was all for his foundation, the Let 'Em Play Foundation, to raise awareness on how PE has been taken out of schools and, you know, the importance of physical activity in kids and what that does for them and their brain and just overall good health. So we will continue with part two of our discussion with Eric Burns. So here we go.
My real question, actually, because I'm so fascinated by all this, because I knew none of this since your playing career. I was a big fan when you played. But here's a question that I had Brett the other day when he said, "Hey, I got Eric Burns lined up. We're going to talk about the movie." And so I immediately thought he was talking about Moneyball. And I know you were a member of the O2 Moneyball team. So can you just speak to our audience about that movie and what it was like? And did you guys feel, was there something different in that locker room than the other locker rooms you played on? Because we'd heard about it for years. There was, of course, the book. So many people have tried to replicate it. Now, of course, there's so many people doing their own sabermetric stuff. But being a part of that original organization, and my brother came up with the Yankees, and the A's were always that team on the heels of the Yankees in the playoffs during the Yankees quote-unquote dynasty. What was it like to be a part of that?
It was cool. I mean, there was a lot more, obviously, that goes into you know, what that team was than what was portrayed in the movie, you know, and I think it starts with the minor league system and Keith Lippman, who was the farm director. And yeah. He was probably, you know, the most influential guy in my professional baseball career that in his name never gets mentioned. He actually just recently retired and got moved into more of an assistant role, but he, like, what he did in developing the players, just like player development, I can't tell you guys. I mean, you know, Brett, you know this, dude, how big it is, because once you get to professional baseball, you have a bunch of dudes with talent. And the question is, how are you going to make that talent come to fruition, and how are you going to get the most out of it? And so for a long time, the A's did a really good job of that. Now, that all said, Billy has always been on the cutting edge. And you know, the fact and idea that a movie was made with Brad Pitt, you know, being the lead guy and playing Billy Bean, like, as far as I'm concerned, dude, that was deserved, man. Like, he, what he did, the way he thought, the what he was willing to try, was revolutionary. And then you saw all the other teams adopt it. Like, I was sitting in a room with David Forrest, who basically, him and I are the same age. I played against him. He's at Harvard. And he's now the general manager of the A's, and, you know, and Billy's the president, whatever. But this is 2000, and we're talking OPS and OPS plus. So it's just like nobody knew what that was.
No, and everybody thought he was crazy. Everyone thought he was crazy for doing all this stuff.
So you know the parts of the movie where you see, like, Billy or David and, like, sitting around with it was Peter Brand, too, who was Paul DePodesta, but sitting around and explaining to the players, like, they communicated to us. They told us the numbers that they were looking at to evaluate. And so, you know, in that regard, I had a ton of respect, you know, for Billy. Now, that all said, you know, he was really, there were a few things that he was caught up on, like, you know, the lefty-righty matchup thing. It's sure. It's all about numbers, right? And so, but Brett also knows that, look, if you're, say a standard left-handed hitter, and you never face Jock Peterson, perfect example for you guys. If Jock Peterson never faces a left-hander, he's never going to get better against left-handers. Sure. So you take this guy with this crazy talent and who should be in the lineup each and every single day, and you pull him out against every lefty, how are you ever going to expect him to get better against the lefty? So that was kind of one counter-argument. But at the same time, you know, Josh, kind of go back to your original point, like, was it different in that locker room? Yes, because you had 25 guys that bought into a role, 25 guys that didn't care who got the credit. And that is very rare in professional baseball.
That's hard because the game has changed. I mean, when you and I came up, and I'd like to know your opinion on this, is, you know, it was very different. We came up and there were the veteran guys and they clubhouse and the rookies, you know, knew their place. They knew not to speak. It's very different now. And I think it has to do with, there's a lot of money involved where these kids come up from the get-go. They've already made their money and they walk in the clubhouse and they know they're the franchise. They know they are the guys there. So there's a different mentality and the game has changed. There's a lot more. Could you imagine when we came up, the showboating and the bat flipping and all that stuff? I mean, if somebody bat flip on me in the third inning, dude, they're getting one in the neck, like, the next time up. That doesn't happen anymore. The game has changed so much, but you're right. The people have to buy into it and they have to fool. I hated facing Oakland or a minor league an Oakland organization in AAA, because you knew the game was not going to be easy and flow, and kids were going to be coming out of their shoes early in the count. You knew they were going to work counts, which as a pitcher, I mean, here I go. Now I got to work. Now I know my pitch count. I may last six innings, because I'm going to be up in the 100 at that point, because Oakland, that's what they were about. And like you said, it's revolutionary, because now every team is looking at those numbers. Every team is dissecting it to, like, a crazy degree, almost. And this would be interesting in your opinion. Is it too much? Is it the analyzing too much stuff now, or do they just need to figure out what's important and what they should really be looking at?
Yeah, I think there's a fine line when it comes to the players. You know, Torrey Lovello, who's the manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, I think he does a really good job in the communication between the players and the front office personnel. And that's why, you know, I think the manager's job is so important right now, because basically you would give a player, you have to know how much you could give somebody, right? And you know, it's easy to say, well, you give them what they want and whatever, but it's like, you have to be very gentle when you force feed some, you know, something to right. somebody. And because you can't force it. If you force it, you lose them. You have to just be able to, you explain to them and say, hey, look, like, this is the reason why I want you being aggressive on the 0-0 count, because you get a fastball 75% of the time as opposed to 52%, which is league average now, and yeah. So you make these things make sense to these guys. but you don't want them thinking when they're in the box. You can't right. think and hit at the same time. It's just, you know, we know that. It's just, it's a natural instinctive reflex thing, like very complex between the eyes, the mind, and the body all working together. So it's, I just think that it's really important to make sure you figure out who can digest what.
As right. a baseball That's a good way to
analyst,
put
it. I love it. Baseball analysts, like, give me every number you could dream of. I want all of it.
Right. So and then,
go ahead, Brett.
Well, yeah, no, Eric was saying, like, hitting, you know, you can't think up there. As pitching, the times that I got most in trouble is when I'm thinking too much. I mean, there were points, I still remember, I was facing Barry Bonds and I was going through a little bit of a struggle. And it was like, I would think, all right, little step, leg kick, break your hands, arm up. Like, if you think that much, you got no shot. Because at that point, what am I trying to do? Where am I trying to throw this ball?
Sound like Crash Davis there, man.
No, seriously. And there's times, I mean, that's why baseball is a very hard thing. Hitting's hard, pitching's hard. And if you're there, you got to react. It's a complete reaction type game. And if you're clouded, if you have more than, I always said that I could have like one thought process, maybe two if I was locked in. If I was really locked in, I could think two things during my delivery and still figure out what I'm trying to do with the pitch. And it was, so to put it gently, I usually had to think one because I was never that locked in. So, you know, I think it's all how you want to use the information. Like you said, as an analyst, as what we're doing, you know, we started this up last year, you know, it's been fun to look at all the numbers because you can really, if you really know how to look at it, you can find some interesting things and really kind of see like, this all makes sense why this guy can't get it done or why this guy's doing what he's doing, because look at these numbers. Look at how these numbers add up, and that's why he's being successful right now.
Well, I tell you what, looking at on Baseball Reference, and there's a stat that – there's a couple stats I wanted to ask you about.
You're asking about his batting – Eric's batting average against
No, me? Against you, I heard. I heard over 500.
Not good. 571, I looked it up. 571.
No way.
Yeah, dude, there was a stretch. I can remember you almost decapitated me one at bat in Arizona.
Up the middle. I do remember.
Up the
that.
Middle, dude, you almost killed me. And I saw you afterwards in the tunnel, like I think it was a getaway day. I was like, dude, you almost killed me. He's like, oh man, I just got a pitch I can hit.
Well, that was the year probably. Hey, so this is the number that jumped out at me. 699 plate appearances in one season. That's crazy. In 2007. With Arizona, it was that you were top 12 in the MVP voting, had a great year, but that's a ton of at bats.
Yeah, it was, you know, one of the things I pride myself on was, you know, being able to play if I got the opportunity. So, you know, I played 10 healthy years before I eventually twinged a hamstring and then tried to play through it and popped it off the bone and then came back and got hit in the hand and shattered my hand and whatnot. But,
well, let me ask you.
I saw that video of your son dotting you up. That was he's going right for the weak spot. I shattered my hand too. That's how, that was my last game. Was I got my hand shattered, had to have surgery. So kind of hit home. I was like, oh man, that little kid just went right up and in on him right there.
Let me ask you about the free agent process where you ended up in Arizona as a free agent in 2006. Correct? Yeah, that was your choice to go there, or was that a trade?
No, it was my choice. So I got traded. I was in Oakland from 2000 to 2005. Got traded to Colorado at the All-Star break in 2005.
Yeah.
Played there for 2 weeks. Traded to Baltimore.
And then you became a free agent. Yeah.
Non-tendered.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to ask you. Go ahead.
I struggled in Colorado, struggled in Baltimore, just tough second half of the season. You know, I think for a lot of different reasons, but I mainly it was just – trying too hard, right?
But when you got
teammates and whatnot.
But the next couple of years were the best years, and that's why I wanted to ask you. You going through that free agent process is really an honor that you earn because you've been in, you know, playing at the highest level for all those years. One of the things I noticed is your first year in Arizona, 25 stolen bases. You know, that's 8 more than you'd ever had. And then the next year, what happened? The next year, you took off 50 stolen bases, only got caught 7 times. Was that important to you in the free agent process? Did you tell the teams, hey, I want to run more. I can run. I know there's a random question, but I'm looking at the stats. Yeah. Maybe he just wanted to run.
Well, you know what, Josh? I was always like, I would say like my best attribute as a baseball player was that I was an athlete. So sure, I don't think I was tools. I don't think I was ever a great baseball player, really at any point.
No, but dude, come on. You make it to the major leagues, you're a good baseball player.
Yeah, well, of course. But in the kind of grand scheme of things, like compared to other big leaguers, now don't get me wrong. I had a couple good years and whatnot, but I felt like my strength was, my biggest strength was my overall athletic ability. And so when I was in Oakland, they were on that stolen base kick where it's like, you cannot get thrown out because outs are valuable. Makes a lot of sense. But there's a threshold that says if you could steal at 80% or above, the stolen base is worth it. So I was always really cautious stealing in Oakland. But if you look at, like, the numbers there, I don't remember what they were.
You only got caught stealing, I think, 8 times in 5 years. Yeah, it shows.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy. It was one of those things. So what happened is I got to Arizona, and Bob Melvin came to me the first year. And he goes, hey, man. He goes, every time you get on base, I want you to steal. And I'm like, okay, Bob, yeah, sure. And I end up stealing like with 25 out of 26 or something. And he goes, the next year I show up again in spring training in 2007. He goes, I don't think you understood me. Every effing time, steal. And so I'm like, okay. And so that was the first year that I felt like the chains got taken back. And I wasn't worried about whether or not I was going to be in the lineup the next day. It was really...
Sure.
You know, one of the only years that I played where I went to the clubhouse and I didn't even check the lineup. I knew I was in there.
Leading off, so probably, then, I bet.
I'd lead off one day, hit fourth the next.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. I mean, I pride myself in that too, is having the ability to, you know, go both in a spot where you could get on and make something happen and in that leadoff spot and then also hit cleanup as well. I think now, because, you know, you see managers manipulate lineups different ways. If you were to ask me, I would get into that situation sometimes. And in 2007 was probably the first year where I didn't change my game based on where I was hitting in the lineup.
Sure.
I think that's really important for all hitters. You know, even don't change your mentality based on external factors that really don't mean anything. Go out there, you play your game, take good at bats, see the pitch, look for something to drive, put a good swing on it, that's it.
Hey, you know what? We've all been hanging out at home, not doing a whole lot, doing a lot of stuff around the house, cleaning. You know what? There's some other fun stuff you can do. You know what you can still do? You can still bet online. You know where you go? You go to betonline.ag. With no NBA, NHL, or MLB, which, who knows, maybe MLB will be starting up soon. You might think there's nothing else to bet on, but BetOnline still has hundreds of places to wager, including their online casino with poker and blackjack. And sports aren't completely done. There's still some other stuff you could bet on. Mixed martial arts, American Idol. That's right, you can bet on American Idol. The elections, the spelling bee, and their $750,000 poker series. There is still some fun to be had on betonline.ag, and use their promo code MYPOD100 to receive your welcome bonus on your first episode. That's right, you get an extra little bonus. Again, that's betonline.ag, BETONLINE.AG, and use the promo code MYPOD100, MYPOD100. BetOnline, the fun never ends. Right. Hey, so we're getting down here to the nitty-gritty end of the show. I got a little fun thing. I'm going to throw some simple questions at you. Kind of silly. And we'll get your opinion. Okay. First, what is your least favorite of the triathlon, the swim, the bike, or the run?
Let's talk
about the one across the country. let's make it bigger. What was your least favorite part?
The swim. It's gnarly. I mean, hopping into 52 degree water, shark infested, you know, had a juvenile great white shark swim right underneath me. The being out in the middle of the bay with the barges.
The current.
Geez, I was swimming basically uphill for the last mile and a half, 2 miles of the swim. It looked like, and you could tell in the dock, it looks like I was swimming backwards. It's the most intimidating. It's, I do like the feeling of getting out of the water. There's no better feeling.
Because it's over with. That's why you're like, I'm done.
Yeah, it's I didn't swim growing up. Other than I grew up surfing, but never competitively swam. So that's the most difficult for me.
Okay, two part question here. Favorite ballpark?
If I had to just pick one, and obviously I'm biased to where I went to when I was a kid, it's Candlestick Park.
Okay. Man, that was something. I hated that place. As a pitcher, it was bad.
I never got to play there, so I went there as a kid, and just the nostalgia element for me.
Well, now we know why you didn't sign with the Dodgers when they drafted you out of high school. If you were a Giants fan, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
Will Clark, man, we have that common bond. I loved Will Clark growing up.
Yeah, Will was my everything. So I would say that. Without a doubt, favorite ballparks, old Yankee Stadium, Wrigley Field, Fenway Park, Dodger Stadium.
Okay, worst ballpark. Worst ballparks. Worst ballpark.
Worst?
I mean, there's not a bad big league ballpark. Well,
it's funny that you're asking the guy who was drafted by the A's and played for some great years about the worst ballpark, because I know what a lot of
I think there's some worse ones. Eric played early enough where he played in some of the older ballparks.
Yeah, no. They call the Coliseum the giant toilet bowl. But it's – the thing about the Coliseum is just I liked playing there. I had no problem. The worst ballparks were the ones where I didn't play well. Right? It was Minnesota.
Spoken like a true athlete right there.
Yeah. The
Minnesota was bad. Yeah, Minnesota. Milwaukee.
I never played old Milwaukee. You know where I love the ballpark? I love the city. I love the road trip, but I never played well. It's kind of funny because I signed with them with Seattle.
Seattle?
So, yeah.
Seattle was great. That was great.
Everything was great about it, but, anyway.
It's a big ballpark, yeah. All right, worst state you crossed during the trip across America? Toughest state.
So it's by far and away, and it's not even close, Wyoming. And it's – I don't say in the sense that – because if I had to move tomorrow, there's a good chance, I tell you, I'll go move to Wyoming. I loved Wyoming.
Why was it bad?
It's a wild west. We might as well have been crossing in a covered wagon. I mean, it was – The stuff that I saw there, just getting from Cheyenne, it was from Laramie, where University of Wyoming is, to Cheyenne, we couldn't ride on the 80, okay? And riding on the 80 is already uncomfortable anyway. So if I'm telling you, I would have much rather ridden on the 80, that says a lot. We end up having to take these back dirt roads across a gun shooting range and end up what feels like on top of the moon, on this dirt gravel, rolling hill road, which was, don't get me wrong, super cool, with the tornado chasing us. When I say tornado, literally a tornado touched down a few miles from us. The nastiest, gnarliest thing, lightning strike within feet. Justin, my brother-in-law, Muddy Waters, triathlon coach, they were following me that day. And so they came in front of me and went, "Arr!" And they're like, "Dude, you got to get in." Because when you're doing these things, your mind's not – you're in go mode, right? It's like if you're on the mound, you're in go mode. Nothing's stopping you. Nothing's getting your way. So I wasn't going to stop. But when the lightning hit right there and these guys pull in front, so I had to put my bike in the car, drive 40 miles to Cheyenne, wait for the storm to pass with softball size hail. I've never seen hail like this. Go right back to the same spot. Got to connect the dots, right?
Right.
No way I was leaving, one inch.
They're like, "No, you forgot 3 miles.
Yeah, that wasn't happening. So go back to the exact same spot. Drop me off. By this time, there's another storm coming in. And the good thing was it had about 45, 50 mile per hour tailwinds. And never in my life, I literally I'm having flashbacks right now. And it was super, super freaking cool, but super gnarly at the same time. So I'm in my aero position on my bike like this. And I have a 45, 50 mile per hour tailwind. I got to be doing 45, 50 miles per hour myself. And I'm watching, I'm like looking off to the right, and I have the GoPro is facing that way. And it's just, and just, it was like, it was something out of a movie, something that's like, dude, this isn't real. And I end up making it to Cheyenne, but that was, I don't know. That was, it's just everything that went on in that state was so next level. Oh, I'm going down the Continental Divide. So then I end up going, we climb up. It was like to, I think 12,000 feet. Okay. And then I'm coming down the Continental Divide, flying again, like 40, 50 miles per hour, and a whole cattle herd decided to cross the road. So it's just like, like just the wildest stuff you could imagine happened there.
How funny. What was the best state? What state did you enjoy?
Iowa. I Field of Dreams. And
oh yeah. Like, yeah. I remember you said that. Yeah. I've never been there. Oh, I was driving from Kansas City to Chicago with my wife on an off day going up to Chicago. And I said, hey, let's veer off to Field of Dreams. It was like 2.5-3 hours out of the way. And I'm like, we probably should just get to Chicago. It's one of the regrets that I've had.
Yeah, you got to get there. It's one of the coolest things that I've ever seen in my life. And even beyond that, just the whole state of Iowa, the rolling green hills, it was just an awesome, epic riding experience. They have a race called Ragbri that you go across the whole state of Iowa. So it's super bicycle friendly because we're used to having cyclists out there, huge bike lanes. Just really a cool spot.
Okay, a few more questions. If you had your chance, what would you wear, Speedo or board shorts? This is an interesting one for you.
For an Instagram video, a Speedo.
Okay.
For like hanging out, like really hanging out.
I never know with you. Yeah. I don't know if you're like, hey, let's go to the beach. I'm going to throw on my Star Spangled Bannered Speedo. I don't know. I've seen you mod in it.
Only to get a reaction.
Okay.
I mean, there's very few things in life that I think like bring a smile to everybody's face. One way or another.
It's Eric Burns in a Speedo is one of them.
A dong sarong is one of them. Right? It's just like, what are you doing?
It depends who has it on. If I got one on, that's not bringing smiles to many people's faces. I'm telling you. All right. Do you consider yourself more of a baseball player or an endurance athlete?
You know what's funny? Because I get this question a lot. You know, obviously at this point, you know, I'm an endurance athlete. It's what I do. Now that said, I learned from baseball, and right, Josh, this goes back to like that 06, 07 period when I finally was able to, you know, in some ways you could say fulfill a lot of my potential, but we over-identify ourselves with whatever we do in life. And so I learned at some point playing baseball, it's like, dude, like baseball is great, but I had so much of my self-worth poured into that sport. And sure, it was what I did, and I was a professional, and I loved it, each and every single minute of it. But when we over identify ourselves with anything in life, I don't think it's good. And so, you know, when it comes to controlling the things we can control, attitude, effort, preparation, you know, those are all the things that, like, you know, if I think about, you know, who I am or how I would describe myself to somebody, I don't, right now I'm a dude freaking rapping it out with you guys on a podcast, and pretty soon I'm going to be chucking my kids some BP in the front yard and, you know, take the girls down to the soccer field and kick the ball. Like, it's, you know,
it's what you are in that moment. It's what you are in that moment.
And that would be the greatest compliment that I think anyone could ever give somebody, is that like, who is that dude? I don't know. It just depends what moment you catch me in, right?
Right.
Because I still love the game. I still analyze the game. I still play the game in the front yard.
Right. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Two quick ones. What would be better? What is better? A walk-off hit or homer or crossing the finish line?
Well, I mean, that's, it just depends. I mean, crossing the finish line of that triathlon across America, well, I think.
Well, that's because you just put like 2 months of your life and.
Yeah, that trumped probably any walk-off homer that I ever had. But you know, for a standard race, it's like, you know, it all depends. It's, we get out what we put in. And so when you're heavily invested physically and mentally into something, you know, I think we all know that the reward at the end of the day, whether it was crossing the finish line of the Try Across America, you know, or hitting a walk-off homer, you know, I can think back, a homer I had in the playoffs against the Cubs and like a really cool period in time in my career. The reward's the process. The reward was what it took to get there, what it took to get to that moment, what everything, all the preparation that we put in that allowed us to get there. That's the award. I'm telling my kids that they just got a bunch of trophies sent to them because the ski season got cut short and all three of them did great and, you know, finished towards the very top of this pretty gnarly, you know, far west ski racing division out here. And it just, they killed it.
Your kids are studs on the slope.
They are, but you know what? They put in a lot of time, but they're sitting there, they're talking over like, they're talking about this trophy or this trophy or this trophy. And well, mine's bigger and mine's this, mine's that. And I'm like you sit up there and there's three Emmy awards that I was fortunate to be a part of an MLB network team that we won. Right. And they're sitting up there. I'm like, have you guys ever heard me say a single thing about the, like these awards? Like, I don't care. Those awards are cool. And it's a nice little thing. It's like, hey, sure. It's a celebration of your accomplishment. But you guys know what the real award was? The reward was you freaking charging down that mountain and making the perfect turn and the practice that you put in and hanging out with your friends and doing what you did. That's the reward.
That's a reminder of that.
It's a reminder of the process. You know what? Right. That's freaking, I'm writing a daily hustle on that. The reward is a simple reminder of the process.
Right. Okay. You got to pick one of these. I'm not going to let you get off on saying either one is great. Win a World Series or win an Ironman. Like win the Ironman, best time.
It's almost like even tough to relate to the Ironman because I've never – now, I've won races before, much smaller races.
I'm talking about like let's go to Hawaii and run that Ironman.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like it's tough for me to even relate or comprehend that because – I wasn't ever at that level, right? And in a lot of ways, I'm grateful for that. And I say that in a sense that, like, I got into the sport for knowing that, like, I'd already competed at the top level of Major League Baseball. I'd already been there. And it doesn't mean I don't want to compete again. I do. But there's a difference when you have something that is your livelihood, right?
Right.
And then you have something that is purely done out of the joy of doing it. And so when I got into triathlon, it literally was like, I wasn't getting paid to do this.
No, it's a hobby at that point. Yeah.
It was costing me a lot of money, right? To go ahead and do this. So the concept and idea to like win Kona, I've never been at that level. I'm not at that level.
But if you could win one, come on, let's not dance around this.
Here's the thing about the World Series.
Kona is the one.
Yeah, Kona definitely is the one. Yeah. But here's the thing about the World Series. The World Series is, that whole process I talked about, right? The World Series is that process, not individually, but collectively as a team. That's what makes the World Series so special. That's what makes it so cool. But at the same time, guess what happens after a World Series is won? It's over.
You have a reminder of the process.
Yeah, but I don't give a shit about a ring. Like if people, the funny thing is like people ask me, they're like, dude, are you disappointed you never won a ring? And I'm like, no, I don't, what do I care? Would have I loved to win a ring? Of course. Was that 20-game win experience with the Oakland A's? Like, that alone, in a lot of ways,
maybe was even
kind of like winning a ring. It was just like such a euphoric experience. And the way back then that it got so much attention as it built up. And, you know, I mean, they ended up making a movie. But at the same time, it's like you look back on that. And the thing that resonates with me were the relationships.
Right.
It was David Justice being freaking, you know, going out with 23 out of 25 guys. And I lose a credit card roulette game. And I'm walking back with a $10,000 bill. Oh. My checks were like 15 grand, right? So I've been like, basically my paycheck gone. And this dude comes up over the top and he hands me the bill that I already signed out. He goes, here you go, bro. And it says void on it.
Yeah.
Like,
no, and
that's the type of atmosphere.
I think if you talk to pretty much every professional athlete across the board, and I mean every single one, and when they're done playing, say, what do you miss? What do you miss in the game? And it's all going to be the relationships and the process and the grind with the team. And that's what I miss. I miss the guys. I miss this. I miss our banter before we even started taping. It's like, what's going on? And you just start talking about anything and everything. That was batting practice, you know, shagging in the outfields is those conversations. I hated batting practice. I hated shagging, but I'd give anything to go back for one batting practice to stand out with some boys and just shoot the shit.
Yeah.
Sit there and talk about it and hang out. That's what I miss the most. Is that camaraderie. For sure. True. All right. We'll wrap it up here. Hey,
yeah, I think we could talk for days.
So I know we've kept you way longer than I thought. One quick thing, cause it's relevant right now. And we can just touch on this real quick is the season that got postponed or potentially canceled because of what's going on, and them talking about starting it up in Arizona with no fans in the spring training facilities. What do you think about all that?
I'd love to see it happen. So long as, you know, no one's safety is put in jeopardy. I think that baseball is in a very unique position where we have the ability to, you know, really kind of be a nice morale boost for a country in need of it right now.
You were part of 9/11. You're around with 9/11, right? Yeah. And we had Kevin Newman on the show last week, and we talked about that first game back from a 9/11 and how it was so great for the country. How, like, it's something I will never forget.
Never. And it's in, you know, in a lot of ways, I remember this from a documentary I watched with Pat Tillman, but they had a vote in the Arizona Cardinals clubhouse of like, hey, you know, how many players want to play Sunday and how many players don't want to play, whatever. So it's like, everybody said no play, right? Pat Tillman was one guy that raised up his hand and was like, nah, we play. And in the documentary, they have one of this New Yorker that was there, and he's like, dude, what the fuck? Like, no, like, how disrespectful, how dare you this, whatever. And basically, like, let Tillman have it. And Pat goes, we don't play, they win.
Yeah.
We play, we show them, you can't stop us. It's our way of responding. And that, in a lot of ways, bringing it back to today, is our response to the COVID-19. It's like, look, you've completely, this whole thing, this whole virus has completely altered our lives in so many different regards. But what we've showed that we can do as a country, as long as I've been alive, and I love history. So, you know, I'm actually even currently watching this How America Was Made documentary. It's like an 11-part series.
Oh, I watched some of that. It's great.
Oh, so cool. We are resilient, we are resourceful, and no matter what, we are going to figure out a way to continue to put one foot in front of the other. And so in a microcosm here with baseball, that's one of the ways that we are going to show this virus that, look, we're going to make adjustments, but we're going to continue to go. And I'd love to see it happen. It's just, there's obviously a lot a lot that's going to need to go into it, and nobody wants to jeopardize the safety of anybody as well. So it's, you know, Rob Manfred and Tony Petitti, who I had an opportunity to work for at MLB Network. Both these guys are very innovative, very progressive.
They even talked about, they, I heard some even talking about playing in Japan, which would,
I heard that too,
which would be, I don't know if I like that idea. I'm all about getting the games in and not losing the season, but I'd like to keep it here if we could.
Yeah, but what do I care? I'm watching on TV.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, yeah.
We're not going out.
We're not going to the games.
Like, I just want baseball. I want baseball at the elite high level.
You and me both, man. I need to watch.
Right?
Josh wants all baseball except the Astros.
That's right.
That's been a constant on our podcast.
Hey, give me your 30-second response to your what happened with Houston. I mean, what's your thoughts on what happened there?
Caught in the culture. You know, it's unfortunate. One small thing led to big things.
Yeah.
So, essentially, you know, I've had an opportunity to talk extensively to people within the organization, and you could see how and why it progressed to the level it did. And the justification also of, hey, everyone else is doing it. I mean, it's a real easy excuse.
Yeah.
Was it right? No, absolutely not. And it's unfortunate that it happened. Obviously the Dodgers are, you know, on the losing end of it. Now, who's to say what everybody else was doing? I have no idea. But I can just speak of Houston's situation, because we do know because of the report, and it wasn't right. And sign stealing is not right. And I don't give a shit. Relaying catcher signs from second base isn't right. I never thought it was right. I never wanted the signs. Not necessarily just because it was a moral thing, but also because if you throw me, you tell me, Tompo, you tell me a curveball is coming, I'm going to swing if it's 5 feet outside the dirt.
Because you know what's coming.
Yeah, just I didn't want to mess with it. And I also always believed in, you know, the – look, man, you start cheating the system. It's the same reason why I never did steroids. Like, it's – to go up to bat, like, you have that moral conscious thing in the back of your head, like, nah, man, I didn't do this right.
Yeah.
Right? Like, right. There's something deep inside.
Yeah, Eric, there's a lot of people that they don't have that thought process. They don't care. We know, you know, a lot of people. I know a lot of people that did a lot of steroids.
It's justifiable, though. It's so easy. If I had done it, and I've said this, it's like, I don't even know if it was a moral thing. Like, I'm like, I don't need to get faster. I don't need to hit the ball further. I need to lay off the 2-2 curveball in the dirt. Then I come to find out that, like, it helps your eyesight. And then I'm like, oh, shit, man, I'm glad I didn't know that. Right? So at what point – and then at what point is it, like, how much was it going to guarantee you success? And ultimately, I think there's something, you know, intrinsically wrong about cheating. It's just not – you're right. It's not right. And so – when we've created a culture, and it's not just in Houston, but in Major League Baseball for 150 years that fosters cheating. So when you have pitchers that use pine tar.
We never use pine tar. Never.
Red has clarified that for us consistently. The pitchers don't cheat.
I'll tell you exactly where I put it.
It's incredible, though, that legalized pine tar, right? Like, but just make it to an extent, like, we need to, if the players can't govern themselves and teams can't govern themselves, which they can't, they've proven they can't, we need to govern them. We need to now govern them. At least the sport needs to now govern them. So I'd like to see all technology gone, out, done, nothing in the dugout. And as far as, like, pitchers with the pine tar, sure. Go ahead.
We're just trying to say the balls were slick. So I just didn't want to let one loose. And
they were.
they were slick.
Those old Major League balls, those little rocks, little rocks with no seams.
Dude, so I was just cleaning it. I
blame you guys.
I was doing the quarantine clean out of my garage, and I came upon a box of stuff from the beginning of my career and the baseballs. And I pulled out a baseball from 1997 and had a 2019 baseball. And the difference is crazy. crazy how like tacky one was, and that you could feel the leather and it was bumpy, to now where they're like ping pong balls or like lacrosse balls like that. It's crazy. It's interesting. Well, listen, Eric, always entertaining. Let me throw down some, say, if you don't follow Eric on Instagram or Twitter, you're doing yourself a disservice. It's at eburns22 on Instagram and the same on Twitter. Your podcast, the Hustle Podcast, you can get it on probably any podcast, your favorite ones, or ericburns.com. The Effort List, Lessons from a Human Crash Test Dummy, is your book you wrote. Your foundation, letthemplay.org. Go there, check out the information. Letthemplayfilm.com is where you can get the documentary, which, like I said, I watched it a few days ago, and if it doesn't motivate you, you don't have a pulse. You know, we really appreciate you. We kept you on a lot longer than
thanks for joining us.
But it's
man,
great,
fun.
And it's good to catch up and kind of get your thoughts on some stuff. We love you, buddy. We'll keep watching, man. Appreciate it. Do what you do.
Have a good one, bud.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Josh and Tomko, thanks, man.
You guys, all right, buddy.
Appreciate you guys having me.
All right, bud. Keep it up, man.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. See you. Bye.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.